Is your laptop muted, Tim?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're live at Convergence 2016. Our guest is author Kelly McCullough. We talk with Kelly about using humor in dark situations.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. We are live at Convergence 2016.
That's right, 2016.
I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Molly Glover.
That's me.
And for this podcast, we have our special guest, Kelly McCullough.
That must be me, then.
That is you. And we are also joined, if she has any thoughts to provide, by Amanda Marcotte.
Hi.
Hi, Amanda. So what I wanted to start with, Kelly is a author, well-known author. He has been a guest of honor at Convergence before. I brought up your bona fides, so I didn't forget. Author of the Fallen Blade series and the Webmage series, among other works. You can all be very impressed. Kelly and I have known each other since we were thinking maybe we were seven.
Seven, I think.
Yeah, wow. We've known it since a long time.
I'm so sorry.
I was in a room earlier, and I realized that I had known Tim longer than any of the other people in the room had been alive.
So there's a sad admission for all of you. No, actually, I did want to tell a quick story about Kelly before we get into the meat of our topic. And that is many years ago, around about the time we were in our 20s. And I should, Kelly and I hung out with another very good friend, a long-time friend, Carl Anderson. And Kelly was talking to some friends when we were in our 20s at some point, and he said, yeah, Tim and Carl and I used to hang out together back when we were nerds, but Tim and I got better. And I know that sounds terrible, but I'm going to point out that Kelly is now a science fiction and fantasy author, and I started a science fiction convention.
And I'm married to a physicist.
So you were really wrong. Carl is not at this convention. He's in Alaska with his wife.
Uh-oh.
Nerd.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I've made a career of being really wrong. So it's working for me so far.
And speaking of being really wrong,
Tim, what did you expect?
The reason we asked you on the podcast, not just because you are an author of note and a longtime friend, but because you posted something on your Facebook. It was about 6 months ago, and I pulled it up, and I'm like, wow, this is like my philosophy about humor. Hmm. So I thought it would be a good thing to talk about. So what you wrote, one aspect of everything I write is humor in the face of darkness, usually sarcastic and a touch silly. That's the bedrock of my personality showing through. Humor is a coping mechanism. Humor is a breathing mechanism. Humor is the best weapon the light has against darkness and the inevitable end of being. So
Hell yeah.
I was like, yes, I've said practically that exact, I mean, not as eloquent because, you know, you're the writer, but I thought it was a great sentiment, and so I wanted to get you on to talk about that sentiment.
Hey, Tim's like comedic philosophy along those same lines had some mention of like, and farts are funny. Like, I think something maybe
funny.
Mentioning Sharknado or something too. Yeah.
Well. To be fair, I did spend a couple years in a slapstick troupe, so I can't go for highbrow.
You did. It's true. This is true. This was before your time at the Renaissance Festival. Yeah. His slapstick troupe 1 year at Closing Gate Show took up the entire Closing Gate Show.
Oh, at the Renaissance Festival.
At the Renaissance Festival.
Awesome.
Took up the entire Closing Gate Show. It was a 20-minute show with a pie fight.
Yeah, we actually we had it catered by Byerly's. There were 188 cream pies.
Awesome.
Wow.
And it just went on and on. There were so many pies. It was such a big mess.
It was a delight. These were weapons grade pies. These are not the kind of cream pies you get with like Ready Whip. These things, they had weight. You'd take the pie and you're like, okay, I gotta shake it off. Here comes the next pie.
Yeah, military-grade enriched meringue.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right. So that was what they were doing. against darkness and the inevitable end of being as they were hitting each other with pies.
Well, like you do.
I mean,
if you're feeling bad, hitting someone with a pie is probably pretty good for your mood. I mean...
I'm pretty sure that after you get hit in the face with a pie, it's hard to be that mad because you are covered in pie. So really, I mean, you eat a little pie and it's kind of all right. Yeah, you got me with a pie.
It's a problem you can halfway eat your way out of. So.
Well, and it's better than like the eggs because the eggs bond your clothing to your body forever.
And they have sharp shells. Pies are soft all over.
Well, I mean, yeah.
What part of a pie is sharp?
I don't know. Like the tin?
The tin.
So, like, if it's on a thing, the thing that conveys the pie might be...
You convey
to be
the
fair,
pie.
At one point we also did the unnecessarily violent version of this, where we were talking about the cream pie with ground glass in the bottom. So we had the cream pie with a substrate of Karo syrup with red food coloring. So it's this beautiful splatter of cream and simulated blood.
Just a year or two ago, they did a pie fight that was ingredients. So it was just like eggs and flour and sugar and all that just like set out on a table. And that was what they pie fought with, was just pie ingredients.
Okay, I'm picturing the 5-pound bag of flour to the side of the head being a little bit more of a stunning weapon.
It's a pillow fight you don't wake up from.
So, pie fights aside, I just wanted to give you a chance to like comment and perhaps expand on the quote that I just read.
Well, I think it comes out of... learning very, very early that life could be a pretty dark and brutal place. So the book that I've just written that'll be coming out about this time next year is called, the last title I saw was Magic, Madness, and Mischief. And it's demi-autobiographical. It's about growing up in a family with a mentally ill parent and the St. Paul Open School, which is like, okay, there is no structure in either of these places. Let's run with this.
Yeah, no kidding.
But yeah, so when you're like 10 and you discover that your parents are not going to be a security blanket for you, you have to start developing coping mechanisms. And at that time, my grandmother, who had had a number of tough times in her life, was living with us. And she introduced me to the black joke, I think, before I was 6 or 7. And suddenly they made infinitely more sense.
By black joke, you mean dark joke. Yeah, okay.
There was a moment of weighty white guilt in this room.
No. If you're talking about like humor, a grandparent, like you never know. Someone's got that racist grandma that's like...
Black
someone,
humor,
you can
dark
just say
joke.
My name.
Yeah, it's Molly has a racist grandma.
And you...
Thank you for saving me from myself.
And you are. You're just finishing a book right now. When you posted this, did this thought come from that book? From the writing of that book? Were you writing it at the time?
Yeah, that was 6 months ago, so yeah. Definitely. And for me, part of this is that my mother is a paranoid schizophrenic. She's on her meds. She's doing great. She's a wonderful person. But I have had moments in life where that was less true. Where was I going with this?
I don't know.
Apparently.
Yeah.
But
she had pies.
When she is paranoid and schizophrenic, when she is psychotic, she becomes deeply religious. She is not religious at all when she is not psychotic. So from a very, very young age, I developed this map sort of in my head of religious behavior denoting massive delusion. And this left me with a vivid case of theophobia.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense because, you know, a lot of times when people go, you know, with paranoid schizophrenia, you know, when things are at their worst, you know, that is, there are God delusions. And we have a friend who is paranoid schizophrenic, and her whole thing is that when she's bad, she thinks that the gods are talking to her and instructing her a lot. And so I could see how that a person could become religious when you're hearing those voices.
She doesn't want help or assistance or to get better because that's like taking away what endows her with some sort of, you know, divine gift. And so she's been very resistant to any sort of treatment or assistance.
Well, and the charming part about paranoid schizophrenia, at least as I have encountered it, is that the paranoid schizophrenic is really good at pretending not to be psychotic when the police come by or whatever other safety mechanism you're trying to get to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the midst of this, you made jokes.
Well, of course.
No, the reason this resonates with me is when I was 19 years old, my father died, and it was very sudden. It was completely unexpected. He had a heart attack while he was on a business trip, and it actually took 2 weeks for his body to get home. So there's this whole time where you're processing the grief, but you can't even get to the funeral to kind of close the whole thing down because there's the anxiety of when is he actually going to show up. And I made ridiculous gallows humor the entire time, and I had family members who were like, "Well, how can you do that?"
Well, I have a funny story that relates very very closely to that. My aunt Ellen.
As funny as mine?
Funnier, I think.
Okay, good. All right.
So my aunt Ellen had a number of problems. She had a pituitary brain tumor when she was, I think, 13. Oh, wow. And then as a result of that, she ended up with both types of diabetes and epilepsy. And she was no one expected her to live past about 15. You know, once the tumor was out and she recovered, they didn't really expect her to live through the surgery. But she made it I was 15, so she must have been in her very late 30s, which was way past they had expected it. But she lived in an apartment building across from what was then Ramsey County Medical Center. Mm. And that was in part because, you know, she could hit the button and they could be across the street to pick her up in a couple of minutes. And she was one of those people who had a really upbeat outlook on life and also a very dark sense of humor. And she would volunteer at the hospital a lot. And one of the things that she often did was she ended up, you know, accompanying bodies down to, as it turns out, there are two morgues at Ramsey County. And one of the things that she was constantly complaining about is she said, "This place is so absolutely disorganized. One of these days they're going to lose a body." I think you can see where this is going.
Oh, no. Oh, that's so great.
So when she finally died, she died at Ramsey County, and we had a memorial service for her there. And then about 6 weeks later, the University of Minnesota called, because she had all of these problems. She had a lot of doctors at the University of Minnesota as well, and she agreed to donate her body to science. And they called, and they said, did someone change their mind? Is Ellen not going to be showing up? And we're like, no, you don't have the body? Because we don't have the body.
Yeah.
And it turned out that she was mistagged in one of the morgues at Ramsey County, so they lost her body.
One final joke. Like, right? Yeah, yeah.
After a decade of making the joke, she was the punchline.
Yeah.
Tim, did your dad ever like say something to you like when you were a teenager, like, "Oh, you're such a late kid. You're gonna be late to your own funeral," or something like that? Because that would also be like, kind of ironic.
Yeah. No, I remember. There was my mom who there was a story of me. There was some night that I was out with friends. It was probably Kelly and Carl, because at the time that's probably who it would have been.
Nerds.
And we'd gone to a movie at the Harmar Movie Theater, and we lived about, I don't know, 5 or 6 miles from the movie theater. And I've always been a walker. I love to walk places. And so we got done with the movie, and we were hanging out, and we were goofing off, and we realized that it was too late for the bus. So we figured, all right, well, we won't worry about calling home. We'll just walk home. So we walked home, and we got home at, I don't know, something like 4 in the morning. And, you know, my mom was a little concerned.
Oh, really?
She was a little concerned, and apparently at some point when they were pacing the house wondering where their eldest son was, she said something to the effect of, "Well, I don't know what I'm worried about. He's such a space cadet. He probably just got lost on the way."
Yep, that's exactly what I was looking for.
So that's sort of the same thing.
When you're talking about like grief and like humor to cope with loss, when my grandfather died, my dad told this story over the casket to all his brothers, my uncles,
big like 10
Catholic
brothers.
Family. Yeah. I have like 7 uncles or something. And so when they were kids, my dad's the youngest, growing up in a farm. My dad went and grabbed my grandfather's pistol.
When he was like 6,
and went out and was just like, "Crane silo, perfect. Pop, 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 pop." And put like, you know, 6 or 7 holes in the grain silo. And was like, "Ha, fun." And then, you know, put the gun away.
Look,
and
grain's
everything.
Grain's coming out.
Yeah. And so being the youngest and like the baby, all his other brothers were pretty severely
punished
physically. The belt, etc. You know, rough. And not my dad, ever. And so the grandfather's theory was like, I'm going to punish each son down the line until one of them confesses or rats on one of the other brothers. And he just never made it to my dad because he couldn't have been Steve. He's, you know, he's the baby. And so years and years later at my grandfather's funeral, they're just over the casket and there's just a couple moments of silence. And my dad just goes, I was the one that shot the silo. And all his brothers were like, what the fuck, you son of a bitch? Like, do you know how many times I got whooped for that? Like, and you know, and like every single one of his brothers were all of a sudden laughing and also probably pretty upset at the same time. And it lightened the situation, and it was I mean, my grandfather wasn't like a stellar guy, obviously.
He literally was not a good guy.
But they were able to, you know, kind of grieve in that light and remember him as maybe not this perfect guy, but also have a laugh about it. And
the father they got, the one they got.
Yeah, you know? It's cathartic. I don't know what it is. It's just.
Yeah, people were asking me, well, how can you joke about this? I'm like, how can you not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How can you just sit here and be depressed? Is that making it better for you?
Well, no, but it's. I mean, you can't say. I don't know. Depression's different, man. Depression's
Well, you know what I mean. How can you just wallow in mope. The sadness? How can you just mope? And it's like that's at some point there has to be a point where you feel better. And I guess that humor was my way of going, I'd like to feel better sooner. Thank you,
Kelly. My mom always told us when we were growing up. I grew up in a house where we got my parents are firm believers in teasing as a way of toughening you up, but like kind teasing.
That's affection. It counts.
And the idea being that if you can laugh at yourself, you're taking some power away from someone else who might want to laugh at you, you know, in a cruel way. Did you find that helpful as a kid growing up? I mean, I'm guessing going to an open school and with a bad parent, you know, situation at home, teasing was probably on the menu as a nerd too, you know.
So surprisingly, not so much at school. I mean, one of the nice things about open school is there was a little bit of bullying.
Okay.
But not much.
It was there were no
it was personal.
There were no jocks and nerds in open school. I went there too for several years. The sports teams were all like co-ed and totally chill, and they didn't compete with anybody, and I don't think they kept score.
There wasn't enough structure to create some sort of social hierarchy.
Like, did you get emojis for grades?
Very nearly.
Sometimes, sometimes you got, you know, sort of like a stern look. It's a great school if you're self-motivated.
Mm. Yeah,
and I can't speak for Kelly, but I can speak for Carl and I, in that. Well, because Carl's not here, so I get to speak for him.
Take that, Alaska.
But
fair enough.
But when it came to being the right kind of school for me to be in, it absolutely was not. Mm. I skipped, I think, literally every class most every day, including, and this is true, the classes taught by my mother.
Genius.
Awkward.
Yeah, that was not the most clever move you've ever made.
No, it wasn't bright.
Although I do have to note one of the more clever moves you made while skipping class, particularly with me. And this is one of those stories that I have told periodically over the years. This is how I became involved in theater and ultimately ended up as a writer. Tim and Carl and I were off to play Dungeons and Dragons. I had finally forgiven him for killing my first character, Tim, that is. Bastard.
I did that.
2 minutes into the game.
Dice say you have to obey.
Right. Okay. So we were off looking for a place to play Dungeons and Dragons. And at this particular moment, we decided that we were going to wander into what was the gym/auditorium. And then you can pull out the curtain and slide up onto the stage where nobody in the world will find you. But the class that Tim was skipping was a class called Roving Theater.
Why did I skip the theater classes? What was wrong with me?
I don't know. I went back to. I don't know if you were there much of the rest of the year, but so we were sneaking into the gym, and they were not actually on the stage, but they were in this one particular chunk of hallway, which is how the optimum way to get in without anybody noticing. So we come around the corner, and there's Tim's class, and Tim looks up, and there's just, you know, there's this moment of dread, and then you can see the light bulb go off over his head, and he says, "There you are. We've been looking all over. Carl and Kelly want to join us for class today." And this was not an out of the usual thing. People would say, you know, this class that I'm taking isn't a lot of fun. What else is it this time? And they would go.
And that was open school. You could totally do that shit. Yeah. It was amazing.
Now, I do not think for a moment that Vaughn, our marvelous theater teacher, was fooled.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, there was that long moment of,
maybe
we are
Tim
so
wasn't
screwed.
Such a good actor?
Nope.
Is that what you're saying? Like,
no.
At his young age, not attending classes, that maybe he didn't pull it off?
He's a natural.
But I don't know. I don't remember how much of the rest of the semester that Tim skipped, but and I don't know what class I was skipping, but I spent the rest of that class, religiously, attending roving theater. And that was one of those oh, this cut-up thing, this black humor thing that I have been doing all my life with my family, mm-hmm. people like this? There's potentially a career in it?
Well,
sign
not
me
that.
Up.
No, it's and I usually didn't skip roving theater. I usually went to the theater class, so it must have been a pretty important D&D game that we were going to be playing that day.
Oh, clearly.
for me to skip that class. I remember that class because that was the class where I got to play Charlie Brown in one sketch, and I also got to play Martin Luther King Jr.
Awkward.
Yeah.
There weren't any.
The class
so sick
was 100% white, and we were doing something for Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday because it wasn't a holiday yet. We were that old.
Yeah.
Kelly, I know a lot of people who were like bullied, who you know like making fun of yourself. You know, you can beat someone to the punch. You can like Molly said, take the wind out of their sails. And that ends up being like a coping mechanism for, you know, make yourself the butt of the joke before someone else can. And did you have stuff in your life that was, you know, not ideal or hazardous, and you coped with that way, but you didn't have any bullying. What type of jokes were you tell? Like who, like about situation, about life in general, about like what was your dark humor topic?
Well, I think I would like to believe, being the person I am now, that I was mostly the butt of my jokes, because I try to do that now, and I think I learned that fairly young, but I can't be entirely sure.
Sure.
I
remember shit from when I was a teenager, so, you know.
Yeah, most of the horrible things from when I was a teenager are more about, like, let's see, what's the statute of limitations? Climbing buildings I oughtn't to have been climbing, driving through parks, fencing on, you know, on fences, actually. The usual, hey,
meta.
If we do this and something goes wrong, I will break every bone in my body. Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
More like, I couldn't possibly break every bone in my body. I'll live forever.
Yeah.
Nothing can harm me. We're children.
So, this is a great topic, but we actually need to move on to five questions,
Kelly.
Five
questions.
Five questions.
I did my homework, but I've forgotten it, so
that's
let's
great.
Go.
Perfect.
That's great. That's
open
good.
School kids.
Yeah.
All right, Nick, why don't you start with question number one?
Question number one, what's a movie you'll stop and watch anytime it's on?
At this point, Captain America Civil War is the one where I walk by the TV and I'm like...
How did you get it on the TV? It's Captain America Civil War.
Civil War.
Winter Soldier.
Oh, all right.
Okay, take my geek card. I'm sorry.
No, we just thought
maybe famous people got some extra movie channel. We just want to know what the famous channel was. Yeah.
Is Doctor Strange
as
good as
famous
I hope?
First. Yeah. They won't tell us until then.
Yeah. I love Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier. It's for me, it's sort of the platonic ideal of a superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's good action, good like character scenes, good
emotion.
Good bad guy kind of setup.
Totally just threw a huge wrench in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Good intentional wrench.
Yeah. Good political wrench stuff too. Like I really like the kind of political tie-in stuff. Right on.
Question number two: what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
I think I'm going to go with geekiest because this is one of those things where it appears in your house and you're dumbfounded. So I am not a person who's prone to stop talking for any length of time. But my friend James, Tim is more visual humor here. My friend James had seen John Scalzi's Velvet Wesley Crusher, for those of you who are aware of it. And he was like, oh, you can commission velvet art of anything? I am so in for this. And so he organized a cabal of my friends to get a velvet painting of my first book cover.
Huh.
Awesome.
The ostentatiously ornate gilt frame. That was actually the selection on the webpage. And they presented this to me at Christmas after my first book came out, and they just handed it to me. I'm like, For about an hour, which may be the longest consecutive amount of time that I stopped speaking while awake, possibly ever. Well, quite since I started speaking. Well.
That's fantastic.
I know to get Cargill for his birthday now. That's going to be awesome. Yeah,
that's a good idea. All right. Yeah. Okay, question number three. What mythical or supernatural being do you wish was real?
I'm actually going to go with a character of my own.
Oh, there you go. Right.
Melchior, who is the laptop slash web goblin in my first series, who is like the ultimate personal digital assistant. He's smart-assed, he's snarky, but he gets everything done. And I could so use someone to answer my email.
kind of a magic-based Pepper Potts.
Yeah, pretty much, only right not nearly as cute.
Right on.
Awesome.
Question number four. Say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem that humanity now faces?
Okay, so I spend most of my time hanging out with my wife, who's a physicist, and our two best friends, who are a botanist and a geologist. Mm-hmm. So we spend an awful lot of time talking about climate change and global warming.
Sure.
And that's clearly it either way.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
I mean, religion doesn't want to kill me, you know, tomorrow.
Well,
depends on whose.
Depends what you're into.
Yeah, depends on where you're traveling, maybe.
Depends on which flavor of which religion.
Yeah. Right. All right, yeah. Finally, question number five. What is your favorite quote?
Okay, I'm going to go with what is considered to be an anonymous 18th century suicide note, which is all the endless buttoning and unbuttoning. And this has become a catchphrase in our house. It's like, I've got to go unstack the dishwasher. All the buttoning and unbuttoning.
That's great.
Right on. I like that.
You know, that's a suicide note that really does explain it all.
Yeah. It's like, I'm just done with buttons.
It's a life story in one sentence.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the straw that broke the... of black humor.
Sure,
yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Very appropriate. So, Kelly, did you have something? Yeah, Kelly, we want to thank you so much for being on the podcast with us. We really enjoyed having you. His books are available wherever fine books are sold, like Amazon and Barnes and Noble and all those other places that sell it. Yeah, or even your local small
Uncle Hugo's
independent bookstore.
Hugo's usually has everything in my catalog signed. So
nice.
Oh, cool. There you go. Yeah, right, so go to Uncle Hugo's and get an autographed one of his books.
Which slightly reduces its resale value.
Aw, someone wrote in this book.
Who the hell is this Kelly McCullough guy? And your new book, which I imagine will be coming out since you were working on the editing of it just this very weekend. Probably
about a year from today.
About a year from today. And what is that?
That one is going, well, currently maybe. It's called Magic, Madness, and Mischief. It was A Fire Within. It was briefly The Year of the Fire Hare.
So we don't know what the hell it's going to be called.
On the other hand, another book from that same publisher, which is also a kind of a silly, humorous book with a dark, crunchy core, School for Sidekicks. My paperback version of that will be out August 2nd.
Oh, there you go. And cool. You can find out a lot more about everything you do at your website, which is?
KellyMcCullough.com.
KellyMcCullough.com. I have it up on my computer.
Which also comes with cute cat pictures, which is sort of the main feature of the site.
There, nice.
Yes.
If you follow him on Facebook, there are a lot of cute cat pictures, just all the time. Cute cat
pictures. It's on the internet.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It very handily substitutes for content.
Sweet.
All right. So, Kelly, once again, thanks for being on our podcast. We want to remind everybody that we, Geeks Without God, do have a Patreon going on right now. You can help support us, help us produce this podcast, and we are getting fairly close to our first goal.
Yes, and actually, I want to put out a thank you on the air here to Andrew Hackard, who is one of our donors at the $10. Most recent and donating at $10 a month. Thank you, my cousin Andrew. Really appreciate that. And by all means, you guys can go and support us on Patreon. We look forward to seeing your names and maybe announcing you on the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting. So thanks so much for joining us. We are going to be back with another episode from Convergence 2016 next week. Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Knock, knock. Who's there? Death. Ugh.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks,
we're geeks,
we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
geeks without God.
There we go. We're going to take a little bit of a break. Anybody who wants to go pee?